Greetings, everyone. My name is William Porter. Welcome to this edition of Storytelling Time. This podcast is sponsored by Every.Black Entrepreneur Podcasting Network. Our foundation scripture comes from Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6. And it says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." The Storytelling Time podcast this week is a continuation of the program last time when we talked about Cajun culture. As before, the reading comes from the book Miracles in the Lives of Ordinary People and the third chapter that is entitled Fire. This week, the title of the podcast is Empty Nesters. Not long after Earl ended up in Louisiana, he met his future bride, Regina. After dating for a brief period, Earl and Regina were married. They then moved to Forsyth, a small city just outside New Orleans. They had a desire for a large house with a large combined open kitchen and living room. Regina often dreamed about it, and Earl thought that it would be a perfect home for Regina and himself. It would be especially significant for Earl because the small house he grew up in had constricted living quarters. But sadly, it had burned to the ground when he was a boy. The house they desired in Forsyth was too expensive because Earl had yet to generate enough money at his new job to purchase what he really wanted. They ended up buying a smaller ranch house in that city and had to settle for a separate living room and kitchen area. Once they were established in their new home, Earl and Regina desired to take advantage of the Cajun lifestyle and had a very successful living experience in this part of the country. Along the way, after Cindy was born, that family addition created spice to Earl and Regina's home that they didn't have before. Regina was progressing quite well in her professional career, having an educational background in medicine. She became the director of a surgical unit at the local hospital in the city. Earl had an exciting new career of his own. With several years of teaching experience, he became more comfortable with his position at NOU and was in line for his first major promotion in his tenure at the institution. NOU was a small but rapidly growing liberal arts college and was well known for its thorough examination of faculty seeking promotions to higher ranks. Faculty members were required to teach at the highest level and also were expected to conduct a minimal amount of scholarly research to attract extracurricular funds through grant writing. After several years of dedicated work, Earl faced something even more challenging. Once faculty reached a certain number of years of service, they were required to be successful in their promotion attempt. Otherwise, their status as full-time faculty members would end. To assure that he was in line for promotion, Earl worked very hard to achieve any career advancement at the school. To do this, he often spent long hours on the job trying to adhere to the demands of the position in order to remain employed at the institution. Thankfully, all his hard work paid off as he finally received a promotion. Meanwhile, as Cindy grew into adolescence, she developed into a gifted student as she went through the school system with ease. While growing up, she took advantage of her father's knowledge of Spanish. He taught her the language at every opportunity. Even as young as 2 years old, Cindy would know the meaning of commonly spoken Spanish phrases and often spoke to her father in Spanish. She could say with ease such phrases as ¿Cómo está? That is, how are you? ¿Qué hora es? That is, what time is it? And buenos días. That is to say, good day. By the time she arrived in high school, Cindy was fluent in Spanish, being bilingual with her primary language being English. Cindy was very active around the house, as well as being the lead cheerleader at her high school. She certainly wasn't an introvert. She tried to help her mother, Regina, as much as she could in the kitchen, wanting to prepare every meal. Cindy spent a great deal of her time helping her mother around the house with a variety of chores, in keeping up with her schoolwork, as well as with extracurricular activities at school, not to mention her father's constant tutelage in her learning Spanish, there was never a dull moment around the house. Eventually, Cindy left home for college and, after graduation, entered graduate school to study social work. She later became employed as a social therapist and relocated to a job in another part of the state. After Cindy left home for college, Earl and Regina became empty nesters, no longer sharing their home with their daughter and therefore having more opportunity to further develop their own careers and spend more time together. Heat and humidity were not the only facts of life in southern Louisiana weather. The occasional breezes off Lake Esther, together with the heat and the moisture in the air, would often cause violent thunderstorms. At such times, Earl would demand that everyone in the house remain quiet, with maybe only occasional chatter. He was very respectful of the Lord's work, as he put it. There was one such time of violent storms in the area, only a week after Cindy's graduation from high school and after she had taken off for college. Regina had just finished dinner when she and Earl decided to go to the living room and ride out the storm there. "Regina, I'm so full and satisfied from the food that you cooked," he said as he complimented her on what she had prepared. "Okay, why, thank you, honey. And you sure did eat like you enjoyed it," she continued to say in jest, making fun at how quickly he had devoured the food that was in front of him. Then she continued to say, "Earl, let's go to the living room and sit on the couch and ride out the storm there." So that's what they did, as the thunder and the rain and the wind began to descend from the heavens like a roaring lion. Soon, they arrived in the living area where they sat on the couch as Regina had suggested. Then, Earl, being so superstitious from his days growing up with his parents and grandparents back in Wayward, said to her, "Okay, Regina, let's get quiet now and let the Lord do his work." Then she said to him, "Okay, Earl, let's sit closer here on the couch. I'm scared." That's when a big bolt of thunder terrified her even more. "Oh, Earl, I'm really scared," she repeated. At that point, the rain began to get louder and louder as it beat on the roof and the sides of the house. It reminded Earl of those summer storms that beat on the roof of his parents' house back in Wayward before it was burned to the ground. The fierceness of the rain, together with the thunder and wind, made Regina snuggle up even closer to Earl and, in her own way, take advantage of the situation as she said to him, "You know, Earl, we're really close now. Like we haven't been for a while. And listen to the rain and the wind. I know I'm afraid, but it's really kind of romantic too. Do you think so, Earl?" she asked him. Then, before he could answer, she continued to say, "We still can be quiet, but just whisper to ourselves about some things. I don't think God would be mad with us about that." Then Earl responded, "Well, okay then," he admitted. "Yeah, it's kind of nice being close together like this. You do know you're my little honeymoon, don't you?" "Oh, Earl, you're so funny," Regina responded in jest. Then Earl continued to say, "Okay, let's talk some, but not too much." After those words by Earl, an eerie quietness filled the room. "You still scared, Regina?" Earl finally whispered to her. "I'm okay," she said. Then she continued to say, "I know God is doing his work, as you said, so I think I can make it." They sat there a little while more without saying a word, just listening to the wind and the rain. Well, now it wasn't raining as much as it was before, but oh yeah, the occasional thunder continued. After a while, Regina began whispering to Earl again. "All this weather reminds me of my father, who passed away some years ago. We had such a good time together, Earl, and I miss him a whole lot," she continued to say, as tears began to appear in her eyes. Then Earl said, trying to comfort her, "Well, honey, I know you still miss your father. He's with the Lord now, and you just have to trust that he's okay. And more than that, you have to believe that you will see him again someday. I mean, the scripture promises that if we believe. And it also says that God cannot lie. You know, like we humans tend to do sometimes. So, I know it's hard because we miss our loved ones that have passed on. But their spirit is still with us. It's something that you just have to believe, Regina. That's why we're called believers." Regina's response to what her husband said was, "I know that, Earl, what you're saying is true, but it still hurts a lot. It hurts when I think of it, not having my father around. Anyway, let's talk about something that's a little bit more uplifting." Earl did just that, trying to be more encouraging as they both continued to whisper to each other. Then Earl talked about his own father and the experience they had when their house was burned to the ground when he was a boy. When Earl began talking about those childhood memories, it motivated him to speak a little louder. He said, "You know, Regina, there are things that happen in your life that make you realize that even though they may be bad things, you have to remember that God is always working everything out for our good. I mean, that's what the Bible says. I know that our house getting burned to the ground seemed to have been a bad thing. At least, that's what it appeared to be at the time. But now when I look back over it, I realized that it really was a good thing." "What?" Regina retorted. Then Earl presented her with an explanation. He said, "Now, let me explain, Regina. It was a good thing because the house was literally a pile of junk. I was even embarrassed to bring my friends over sometimes. I mean, that place was old and junky. I mean, my father used to keep everything in that old house, and all the junk kept accumulating. He even had an unused car in the backyard that he never drove because it was all junked up. I'm not kidding you." Regina reacted to that bolt of thunder by whispering even more, having a renewed respect for the Lord doing his work, as Earl put it. She said, "That thunderbolt must have been your dad speaking, Earl. Maybe you shouldn't talk about his house and his car like that." Then Earl made a quick response. "Well, like I said, Regina, the place was a dump." Then Earl realized he was talking about his father, so then he made an adjustment to what he was saying. Plus, he showed more respect by speaking softer. He said, "Sorry, Dad, I was really going to say that now I realize that our house burning down at that time was a blessing in disguise, because we ended up getting a brand new house that we lived in for years. And by the way, Regina, my father kept that house a lot cleaner than the old one." Then Earl added by continuing to speak in a soft tone of voice, "I hope you like that better, Dad." I got my answer, Regina, was Earl's response to that last thunderbolt, thinking that it was his father speaking to him. Then he said to her, "Yeah, Regina, my father didn't accumulate nearly as much stuff in the new house as he did the old one." That last comment reflected a renewed respect of what he thought was his father's presence through those bolts of thunder. And based on that comment, you would think that Earl knew his father was still with him, although he had been deceased for quite some time now. Yeah, he felt his father was still listening to him. Then Earl mentioned something to Regina about his father that reflected his faith at the time. He told her, "You know, Regina, the one thing I remember most about the event of the fire when I was a kid was that my father said that he heard a voice in the backyard of our house saying that despite the horrendous event of the fire, everything would be all right. And you know what, Regina? It really did turn out all right. Not just all right, but it turned out to be better than it ever was before, because we got a brand new house. And like I said, in the new house, my father kept it a lot better than in the old one. In other words, he didn't junk it up as much." Earl began to be emotional about it at the time, especially after he remembered hearing that thunderbolt after what he thought his father's displeasure was at what he was saying about his old house. Yeah, both he and Regina just continued to sit there, listening to the wind and the rain, and oh yeah, certainly the occasional thunder. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Without the responsibility of raising a child at home, Earl and Regina found themselves more involved in the social and cultural scene of the city. New Orleans had such a rich history, especially related to the French culture. This made Earl's teaching of Spanish at the local university even more intriguing. While much of the city had its roots in French culture, Spanish also had a rich history in southern Louisiana lore. In fact, some of the first settlers in the region were from Spain, and this was where the Spanish language became even more widespread than that of French. Earl's preparation for greater knowledge about the culture of southern Louisiana included going to the library and reading about the history of the region. Because his childhood was marked by the fiery destruction of his parents' house, Earl was intrigued by the fire that took place in New Orleans that old-timers still talked about. While at the library one day, he read about the history of the city in the 1700s, which was dominated by stories concerning the great fire that claimed most of the city's structures. It was a tragic day for the many residents at that time. The flames destroyed the French Quarter, the heart of the city's financial and cultural life at the time. It was amazing how an entire city could be destroyed, yet rebuilt. The city experienced a similar result after Hurricane Katrina centuries later. Earl studied the history of the city often, and as he read about the fire that ravaged it, he also remembered how he survived the fire at his parents' house during his childhood years. While Earl performed his responsibilities as professor and Regina actively participated in various cultural and recreational activities, they found little time to relax and rest at home. As the years went by, Earl was able to retire from his position. He took a rather early retirement because he could use the funds that he had gained in the military for part of his pension. After his work career, Earl quickly found the time to do some things he had always wanted, including riding a bike in his spare time. Although Earl continued to work on the campus by teaching three courses on a part-time basis, he had more time on his hands than at any other time prior to his retirement. For relaxation, Earl loved to bike around town. It provided great exercise. He had purchased a bicycle when he first moved to the area and vowed that he would make good use of it. After a while, Earl began to bike for more than just recreation. He found that it was a perfect vehicle to use while traveling to and from work, which was about a 20-minute bike ride from where he and Regina lived. He also bought a helmet and was particularly careful of biking laws. It was good exercise, and he considered it to be the perfect way to remain in shape. One day, he decided to bike to work, which he did several times during the week. As he got closer to the campus, he turned a corner too sharply, tumbled off the bike, and hit the side of his foot on a nearby tree stump. While lying there next to his bike, Earl tried unsuccessfully to get up. "Doggone it, I knew I shouldn't have turned that corner so sharply," he moaned. A student who was close by helped Earl to get to the infirmary on the campus to receive medical attention. "Sir," the student said, "I saw you take that tumble. Come on and go with me. I'll take you to the infirmary." The student helped Earl get into his SUV, and there was enough room for his bike, too. When they arrived at the infirmary, Earl thanked the student for his help, then waited to see a physician. The doctor soon came out and took him to be examined. The extent of his injury was greater than Earl expected. The physician found the injury was severe enough for him to go to the local hospital to have minor surgery done on his large toe. One of the infirmary staff drove him directly to the local hospital. Earl contacted Regina about his accident and explained that he had been taken to the local hospital. Upon hearing what had happened, she quickly came to her husband's side. When Regina finally arrived, she saw Earl and said, "Earl, what in the world happened to you?" She saw that he was in such a debilitated position and could not help but worry about his health. Earl explained to her how he had the accident with his bike. Regina comforted him over the next hour before heading back to work. Regina came back and forth from home to visit Earl over the next several days. He spent 2 weeks in the hospital because of complications arising from his injury. After treatment and further tests, he was released to return home. As a consequence of the accident, he was unable to ride his bike for at least the next 2 months. While obviously disappointed, he accepted the fact that he would not be doing something that he loved for a while. It was a challenge for him to even get from one area of the house to another. He tried his best to get accustomed to the crutches he needed to use to support his body as he slowly moved around and about on a cast-covered foot. Whenever he sat down, usually in his favorite recliner, he stayed put for a long time, either watching TV or reading something of interest to him. The cast on his foot eased some of the pain with his toe, but it was a huge covering over his foot, which made it very difficult for him to move around the house. Fortunately, Regina was there to take him most of the places he needed to be until his foot injury became healed, which turned out to be longer than Earl had hoped. He spent about 2 months in that condition. While Earl was recuperating, it gave him an opportunity to be at home more often. And since two of the three courses he signed up to teach were online classes, he was able to do much of his work at home. The other course that he taught was face-to-face, but he was able to get one of his colleagues to teach that. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. While Earl's toe was healing, he stayed at home a lot. During that time, he decided to replicate a meal he saw his roommate Lincoln prepare back in Kansas. He had planned to make this meal for a long time and decided not to put it off any longer. What he wanted to prepare the most was that fried tomato and garlic served with toast bread that he had seen his roommate Lincoln make so many times while in Kansas. Preparing the meal would satisfy a long desire of his to prepare the dish and at the same time relieve Regina from cooking a meal that day after arriving home. The dinner Earl was thinking about would require hot peanut oil to prepare deep-fried green tomatoes in a special way, just as he remembered his roommate had done back in Kansas. He could hardly move around the house at all, but he was determined to cook that meal. After a struggle to get up from his chair, then another challenge to get from where he was sitting to the kitchen, Earl managed to get a frying pan out of one of the cabinets to place on the stovetop. He then placed the green tomatoes, which he retrieved from the refrigerator close by, in the pan. He covered the green tomatoes with a savory vinaigrette sauce, then poured some peanut oil in the pan and adjusted the heat to medium. Earl left the kitchen area to return to the living room, which was next to the kitchen. "Whew! What a job that was," he groaned. Unfortunately, he was not finished. Earl certainly had his challenges getting around, and it had been a long day. One thing he knew for sure was that he did not feel up to eating out, at least the way he and Regina sometimes ate on Wednesday evenings prior to the accident that he had. Regina called and said that she would be home shortly. She said to him, "Earl, I'm leaving work early and I'll be home soon." "Okay, but don't rush back. You know how bad traffic is at this time of day," Earl responded. Earl did not want her to rush home because he knew she would be tired. But more than that, he wanted to make sure he had enough time to prepare the meal before she arrived. Regina looked forward to joining him for a relaxing evening together. After all, she said to herself, I'm really curious about the dish Earl is making. After a short while relaxing in the living room, Earl started to rise out of his recliner to come into the kitchen to check on the green tomatoes that he had placed in the frying pan with the peanut oil. He knew it would be a struggle to get there, given the condition of his foot, but he was determined. As he rose to get his crutches, the phone on the table next to his recliner began to ring. He assumed it was Regina and thought he could quickly let her know about where he was in the cooking and then get back to attend to the food that was being heated. When Earl answered the phone, it turned out not to be his wife, but the plumber who was scheduled to come by the next day to adjust some pipes beneath the kitchen sink. After a brief conversation with him about the task he was to do, Earl hung up the phone and wrote a few notes to inform Regina what to expect. At this point, he was very tired, so he continued to sit there a few moments and suddenly began to doze off. Before he knew it, he had fallen asleep. As he nodded off, the oil in the pan on the stove began to spark because it was being overheated. Then the unthinkable happened. The oil became so hot that it caught fire. A small flame inside the pan turned into a larger one until the whole area above the stove was engulfed in a blaze. By now, it was a large fire that ignited the curtains at the kitchen window nearby where the stove was. Earl was unaware of the blaze that had started. Soon the flames had begun to rise to the kitchen ceiling, but somehow reached the attic, being restricted to that area at that time. At this point, Earl began to sense the smell of smoke. He imagined that he was dreaming. While still half asleep, he thought only about the fire that occurred at his parents' house when he was a boy. But this was not a dream, not a vision. A portion of his house had caught fire. As the flames made way up to the ceiling and spread into the attic, the insulation in that area had quickened the spread of the fire and, within a few seconds, had now consumed most of that part of the house, just beyond where Earl was sitting. The situation was hauntingly similar to what Earl had experienced as a child at his parents' house. This time, it was frying green tomatoes, not cooking spaghetti, as his mother had done on that fateful night back in Wayward that had caused this horrendous event in his own house. Earl finally realized what was happening. Regina was on her way home to the shock of her life. It had been a long day for Regina, and no doubt she was hungry and looked forward to a meal prepared by Earl. As Regina approached the house, she noticed an unusual odor, a smell of plastic coming from the direction of their home. It turned out to be the insulation in the ceiling that had been set ablaze, but was thankfully restricted to the attic area of the kitchen. As Regina continued to get closer to her home, she said with a loud voice, "My goodness, there's smoke coming from the house." Realizing that their home was on fire, she called the local fire department on her cell phone, then rushed toward the house, driving as carefully as she could as she negotiated the traffic along the narrow streets. In the meantime, Earl had to think fast and figure out how he was going to get out of the house. After finally realizing what was happening, he knew the fire was in the kitchen area next to where he was sitting as he smelled the smoke and heard the roaring flames. The cast on his foot restricted his movement and necessitated the use of the crutches that he had. Back outside the burning structure, Regina had gotten closer to the house and began to realize the unthinkable. Earl was still inside the house. When she arrived, she quickly got out of her car and rushed to the burning structure and finally came to the front door when she placed her hand on the doorknob. "Oh, darn," she uttered unconsciously, stopping short of cursing. But the doorknob was much warmer than usual. In fact, it was so hot that she had to take a portion of her skirt to turn the knob in order to keep from burning her hand. She finally forced the door open and immediately heard the roaring fire. She entered the house, then navigated her way toward the area where she sensed the fire was, which was beyond the living room and in the kitchen. There he was. Regina saw Earl, and based on how he was reacting, she thought that he had not been aware the house had caught fire before he finally realized what was happening. Regina herself realized that the smoke she smelled was coming from the kitchen. Sensing the urgency of the situation, Regina continued moving toward Earl to help him out of the recliner. With his whole foot in a cast, Earl was in the process of struggling to get up and trying to get out of the house on his own. Yeah, that's what she saw. Then he saw Regina rushing to his side. "Thank goodness," he thought. He was still incapacitated and couldn't move quickly enough to escape the inferno without some assistance. But Regina was there, right on time for the rescue. It was as though he had been resurrected, like Lazarus of the Bible, and was returned to life as she helped him get out of the inferno. Let's take another break, and when we return, we'll finish the story and close the show. Stay with us. Welcome back. As Regina came to where Earl was in this burning structure, she was able to see the kitchen and view the raging flames. She knew she had to help Earl as quickly as possible. It was a struggle for her to combat the thickening smoke while trying to help assist him in getting out of the house safely. "Thank goodness you're here, Regina," he told her as she approached him. "Just hang on to me," she said to him. With one arm around his shoulder and the other one clinging to one of the two crutches that he had, she helped Earl make it to the front door. Soon, they both were out of their burning house. Within seconds, they were standing on the street, thanking God that they had gotten out safely and wondering what they would do next. As they stood there, Earl vividly recalled again the night when he and his parents stood outside their burning house in Wayward. Meanwhile, firefighters were doing their best to control the flames at his current house in Forsyth. Earl started to get emotional and his eyes moistened. The miracle of being assisted by his wife and getting safely out of the house prompted tears of gratitude. As he thought about his parents' house being burned to the ground, losing everything that they had, he felt that history was repeating itself. Yeah, he remembered how his father had guided his mother, as well as himself, out of their burning house. And yeah, his parents' house back in Wayward was totally destroyed because it was a wood structure. But fortunately, his house in Forsyth was spared a similar fate because it was made of brick and was able to withstand the flames. Well, so much for now. Don't forget to return with us next time for the continuation and the ending of this story. In the meantime, keep in mind that whatever fire you may be going through, have faith in God. And remember that there's always more good things coming your way. We'll see you the next time.